Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support. Well, for me, this is one of those things that is kind of woven into the entire philosophy of how we care for the sick, for the dying. Conscience is a huge part of this. I think medicine historically has always held a high place for conscience. What about healthcare reform? Will the conscience clause for doctors, healthcare workers, nurses, or even pharmacists survive healthcare reform? Wesley Smith joins us on this Thursday afternoon, November the 19th, to talk about conscience clauses. I'd also like his reaction to the Senate version of healthcare reform bill as we start our conversation. He's senior fellow in bioethics and human rights for the Discovery Institute, consultant for the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide, author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Assault on Medical Ethics in America. And he is also author of an article in First Things Online titled Pulling the Plug on the Conscience Clauses. Wesley, welcome back.
Hey, Todd, how are you? And by the way, that conscience clause is in the First Things magazine as well.
Excellent. First Things magazine. I'll add it to the list. Wesley, what does the Senate version, now being hashed out, of health care reform say about assisted suicide?
Oh, well, it's very strange. The House version said that in the end-of-life counseling provision, you remember that notorious, I think it was Section 1233 or something like that, that provided for end-of-life counseling, that there could be no promotion of assisted suicide in end-of-life counseling. That is completely missing in the Senate version of the bill. Secondly, it provides a conscience clause, ironically, that says that people who work in healthcare cannot be discriminated against because they do not provide assisted suicide, euthanasia, or mercy killing. Well, why would you need a conscience clause? And then I went to a section called Protecting Access to End-of-Life Care, and it's a very brief section, and I'll quote it. A community health insurance option, that's the public option, offered under this section shall be prohibited from limiting access to end-of-life care. Well, in Oregon, Washington, and Montana, assisted suicide is considered end-of-life care. That means, if my interpretation is right, and there is no definition of end-of-life care that I could find in the 2076-page bill, that means that in the states where assisted suicide is legal, the public option, it seems to me, would have to cover it.
So do you expect it to, the Senate version, to go back and win out when a compromise is called for between Senate and House versions?
You know, I don't know, but let me tell you something sneaky that Harry Reid has done here. This is not a Senate bill. It is an amended version of a House bill that already passed the House. What they did in California, it's called gut and amend. The House passed a bill that had to do with military issues. What Harry Reid has done is completely stricken all of that language from the bill, which was in fact, I've got it here, an Internal Revenue Code to modify home buyer's credit for members of the armed forces. It's called I don't have the number here. But what he did is he took an unrelated bill, completely gutted it, stripped it, and put in the 2076-page Senate Obamacare bill as an amendment. If the Senate passes this bill, it then goes back to the House. And if the House passes the same bill without changes, you don't need a conference committee. So what you have here is a fast track to passage without the conference committee. And what you also have, if it passes, is abortion coverage, and you have, apparently, assisted suicide coverage.
Wesley, let's talk about Hippocratic medicine and whether or not it still is anything more than just part of the history books in healthcare in America, especially with regard to the conscience clause, which I think used to be part and parcel of the good practice of medicine.
Right. Remember, right now in the United States, no doctor is forced, for example, to perform an abortion, and no doctor is required to perform assisted suicide. In fact, in Washington and Oregon, where assisted suicide passed by voter initiative, there is an explicit conscience clause that protects doctors from having to participate. Montana, which had a bill, assisted suicide became law through a court ruling, is silent on that. However, that could change. I'm noticing a lot of efforts now in this country, and a lot of more talk than efforts, but still some efforts in this country, to require doctors to participate in life-ending medical procedures. They already do that in Australia. In the state of Victoria, Australia, every doctor is required to either perform an abortion when requested or refer to a doctor who they know will perform an abortion if they don't want to do it themselves. In other words, every doctor in Victoria, Australia, must be complicit in some fashion in abortion, even if they are morally or religiously opposed to it. We saw a similar attempt made in California to pass a bill that would have allowed patients to demand from doctors that they be sedated and dehydrated to death if they had 1 year or less to live. And the bill stated that if a doctor didn't want to do it, they had to refer to another doctor who would. It was a backdoor euthanasia bill. It didn't pass. But it shows you the attempt here. When President Bush, in the end of his administration, when his administration put in a conscience clause, that you'd have thought Roe v. Wade had been overturned, the screaming got so loud. And one of the first attempts or first acts of the Obama administration was to begin the process of revoking that conscience clause protection in federal law. So I predict that while at the present time it is not a huge issue, it's going to become a very big issue. And in fact, in Washington State, there was a small chain of pharmacists that wouldn't carry the Plan B contraceptive, the morning after pill, based on the religious views of the owners. In response, Washington State passed a regulation saying that all legal prescriptions must be issued by pharmacists. The Ninth Circuit, a trial court, found that the First Amendment protected this particular chain, but that was overturned on appeal by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which basically ruled that the regulation was legal and therefore enforceable. In Washington, not only now must all pharmacists issue the morning after pill, but because assisted suicide, a lethal prescription, is legal in Washington, and because pharmacists are not protected by that law's conscience clause in the same way doctors are, today in Washington State, pharmacists could be forced to provide lethal prescriptions even though they know that the purpose of the prescription is to kill the patient.
Wesley, I want you to respond here with only about a minute to something that appeared in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You cited in your First Things article on the editorial pages of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch on this issue. They wrote, "Doctors, nurses, and pharmacists choose professions that put patients' rights first. If they foresee that priority becoming problematic for them, they should choose another profession." Your response?
Right. Yes. What the St. Louis Post-Dispatch is saying, and it's awesome and breathtaking, is that if you're a medical professional and you believe in the Hippocratic Oath, you are persona non grata. Get out of medicine. Because the Hippocratic Oath prohibits abortion and prohibits assisted suicide. And the Post says, if you can't do the killing, get out of medicine.
This seems like, and that's not the only paper that carried things like this.
That was the most explicit, but you had so many editorials against the Bush Conscience Clause, and that's what the Post was writing about. Plus, you have many, many medical professional groups now saying, you do what the patient wants. That is taking away the professionalism of medicine and turning it into an order-taking technocracy.
So what should be done? You've got a minute before we wrap up. What should be done in medicine? What kind of a protection for doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and whoever else is called upon to exercise conscience? How would you envision it legally?
I put a whole bunch of checklists in, but I think that states, as well as the federal governments and states wherever you can get it done, should pass a law that says that no doctor, nurse, or bona fide licensed medical professional should be required to participate in the taking of human life in any form. That's the bottom line. There are some nuances within that that we don't have time to get into because of the time constraints. But if we don't do that, you may find that the St. Louis Post-Dispatch's editorial becomes the law of the land.
Is Hippocratic medicine dead, or can it still be revived? 30 seconds.
I think it's very much alive. Doctors and nurses and pharmacists are fighting for it, even in court, like that chain. But unless people get behind Hippocratic physicians and Hippocratic healthcare professionals and protect them, not only will they be driven from medicine, but you'll have a whole group of people who won't even try to go into it because they know they won't be able to proceed with some of the forced human life-taking activities that might be required.
Wesley Smith is a senior fellow in bioethics and human rights for the Discovery Institute, consultant for the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide. He's authored several books, including Culture of Death, The Assault on Medical Ethics in America, and he's authored an article in First Things magazine titled Pulling the Plug on the Conscience Clause. You can read that article tonight under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Wesley, thank you so much.
Always good to be with you, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to be talking with Pastor Paul Spring. It was going to happen sooner or later. Maybe this is premature. It's hard to tell. The Evangelical Lutheran Church in America during the summer decided to lift its prohibition against homosexuality in many forms. This shocked and outraged many of its members. Some of them left, and some of them are planning to form a new Lutheran church body. We'll find out what it's all about on the other side of the break. Then Colleen Carroll Campbell will be our guest. We'll talk about the media and Sarah Palin.
You can call it what you like. I call it now.
We know that many congregations are putting together their budgets for next year. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget for 2010. Simply go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and find out more about the Issues Etc. 300. You'll even find a one-page flyer that you can hand out. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. The Issues Etc. 300.
In a world awash with all sorts of information, opinions, and ideas, there is still a place where God's Word is the central and only focus. Messiah Lutheran Church, 801 North Madison, Lebanon, Illinois. At 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings, God's people gather there to listen to Him. There you will find His words of law and gospel, and of course, our Lord's Holy Supper. Bible classes focus on the Bible and the Lutheran confessions. Come, listen, believe, and live, and check out our website at messiahlebanon.org.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Pro-life professor rejects one award and receives another.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Harvard Law professor Mary Ann Glendon was honored recently by National Right to Life. Her name may sound familiar, having made national news when she refused to accept the Latare Medal from Notre Dame University. She did so in protest to the Catholic University's selection of pro-abortion President Barack Obama to give the commencement speech. Right to Life called Professor Glendon a staunch defender of unborn babies, an insightful critic of pro-abortion feminism. Other recipients of the prestigious Proudly Pro-Life Award include Henry Hyde, James Dobson, and Father Frank Pavone.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.